Good morning. Good to see everyone this morning. We have a good group here this morning. It's said earlier, it's a beautiful day and a great time to be together and spend a little time talking about some things that God would like us to do. And I want to go to John chapter 9 this morning, and I'm going to read the chapter. I'll do it as quickly as I can, but it's a great story. And I know everyone here is familiar with it. We've heard lots of lessons come out of this chapter. Beautiful story. It's almost like a living parable of all the things that are taking place in this. So, starting in verse 1, and he passed by, and of course Jesus, what's happening is in the previous chapter, he's escaping the Jews who are trying to stone him, and so he's leaving the temple. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not this man's sin or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with mud and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "Nah, but it's like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" And he said, "I do not know." They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division among them. So they again said to the blind man, "What do you say about him since he's opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and received sight until they called the parents of the man who received the sight and asked them, "Is this your son whom you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" And his parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. But how he now sees, we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age, ask him." So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "Whether he's a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." They said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" And they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." The man answered, "Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he would do nothing." They answered him, "You were born in utter sin, and you would teach us?" And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it's he who is speaking to you." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, "Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains." I said earlier, this is an amazing story. There's lots of great lessons out of this. I want to spend just a few minutes this morning talking about something that I've been looking at in this chapter, and I want to call it the story of seeing and not seeing. When Jesus and the disciples saw this man, blind from birth, you know, the disciples ask a pretty dumb question. Who sinned that this man was born blind? Was it him or his parents? Now, how could this man sin before he was born to be punished by being blind? It was a belief back then, and maybe even today some Jews still believe, that God punished sin directly with either sickness or death or some sort of disease. And of course, the disciples were looking at it from that standpoint. And they were challenged with this theological puzzle. Somebody had to sin. Was it him or was it his parents? And of course, Jesus sees this man as someone who needs help. And he says, neither. He's not blind because anyone sinned. He's blind so that the works of God might be seen in him. So the disciples were looking beyond this man's needs and looking at their own needs. And they were puzzled. Jesus saw an opportunity. And he did what needed to be done. Jesus saw a rather simplistic situation, and the disciples were trying to make it complex. Jesus took mud that he had made from his saliva, anointed the guy's eyes, and said, "Go wash." You know, sometimes, and I know you've probably been involved with them, I have, some discussions, sometimes even in our classes, of some hypotheticals, some what ifs. And sometimes we get too locked up in those things, and it's become sort of a diversion of what we ought to be talking about, and that's the works of God, the saving of souls. And the disciples here were sort of caught up into that. They didn't see this man as someone who needed to be saved or someone who needed to be healed. They saw someone who gave them a little bit of a difficulty. So they wanted to sort this out. You know, the Apostle Paul told Titus in chapter 3 that avoid foolish things, foolish questions, quarrelings, those kinds of things, because they're not profitable. Do the works of God, for they are good and profitable. And that's what Jesus did here. He took action, did what needed to be done, and the man went and washed in Siloam and came back seeing. And John puts it in such a simple way, and it's really a great understatement, right? That he came back seeing. I can't imagine what it would be like to pull my hands down from the water and suddenly I'm experiencing something I can't even describe. The colors, the brightness, the people, the buildings, all these things that he could hear and sense and touch, but now he can see. I can't imagine the joy of suddenly having that. So what is he going to do with this joy? Who can he share this with? He can't go back to begging. I mean, that's over with. So he goes to home, goes to his neighbors. And what happens? His neighbor said, is this the guy that used to beg that we saw? Now, it couldn't be him. He's seeing. It looks like him a little bit, but it's really not him. He couldn't share this with these people that John calls his neighbors because they didn't see him as he needed to be seen. Romans 12, Paul says, rejoice with those who rejoice and be sorrowful with those who are sorrowful. These neighbors couldn't do that because they really hadn't been involved in this man's life, even though he was blind and I'm sure needed help. They hadn't seen him as he needed to be seen. You know, I was thinking about this and thought, what if one day a man comes through, maybe it's next Sunday, a man comes through these doors and it says, I've been baptized into the blood of into Christ, and I've been cleansed by his precious blood, and I'm looking for a congregation of people to be with. Great. Where are you from? Well, I'm from here in Conway. Matter of fact, I live in Bainbridge. I live on East Hampton Drive. That's interesting. That's where I live. He might say, yeah, I know. I see you drive by every day. I had needed some painting done at my house, and someone recommended a man from Searcy. He came by, and he's painting my house, and he began to visit with me about the Bible. And you know, we studied together, and he converted me. What kind of neighbor am I? That a man from another town could come in and convert a neighbor who knew me, but I didn't know him. You know, I think those are the things that sometimes we get so absorbed in our own life that we don't see a neighbor as we should. Oh, we're friendly. We wave. But we don't know that much about them, do we? And these people here didn't know anything about this man. They couldn't even decide if they recognized him or not. So they had a dilemma. They had a problem that needed to be solved. And so where do you go when you don't have the knowledge to solve a problem? You go where there is knowledge. You go to the Pharisees. They know everything. And they can answer any question. And so they take the man to the Pharisees and they begin to investigate. And they didn't see this man as he needed to be seen. There was no rejoicing that he was born blind. And now he sees. Their focus was on how did this happen? And their conclusion was, well, the Sabbath law has been broken. I guess they figured that making mud was similar to kneading bread, which was against the Sabbath law. Jesus didn't break the Sabbath law. He broke their traditions. And it angered them. And they called the man in and talked to him a couple of times, called his parents in, trying to get enough evidence to condemn this one called Jesus. They knew him. They had heard of him. Matter of fact, they just tried to kill him in the previous chapter. But they couldn't see this man as Jesus saw this man. And this man had heard anger before, but now he got a chance to see it. It was in their faces. And you can imagine all that he was experiencing. He probably couldn't believe it. You know, and the Pharisees, I mean, they were very intelligent. And you can't throw them all in the same bucket. There were obviously some good ones. But generally, they twisted the scriptures to fit their agenda. Matter of fact, earlier in the book of John, they told Nicodemus, read the scriptures. There's no mention of a prophet coming from Galilee. But there was mention of a prophet coming from Bethlehem. But that didn't fit their agenda, so they're not going to mention those things. And you know, sometimes we fall into the same trap. We study God's word with the idea we're searching for something that backs up what we think it should say. And unfortunately, we'll destroy the context. We'll pull a verse. Sometimes we'll pull three or four words out of that verse. And it really diverts us from what we ought to be doing is studying so that we can teach. That is the work of God. That's what we ought to be seeing. Is the lost out there who needs salvation. And sometimes, unfortunately, I think we study and to win the argument. When we ought to be studying to figure out how to convince someone of all the beauty that we see, that we experience. The Pharisees condemned this man and kicked him out of the synagogue. And really, that was his only avenue of teaching at that point, was to be there with those people to hear the scriptures read. They just saw him as a pest that needed to be squashed. And so they got rid of him. And they used their knowledge in such a way that it destroyed what they were really there to do. And, you know, Paul warned about this in 1 Corinthians 8. And I know it's a different subject, but it had to do with eating meats offered to idols. And he said, now concerning food offered to idols, we know all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by God. You know, Christian behavior is founded on love. That kind of love that Jesus wants us to have brings humility. Humility produces this idea that I don't know as much as I need to know. I need God's wisdom and the knowledge from God to carry on. Otherwise, we develop this sort of religious sophistication, which leads to arrogance. And we ought to study with someone with the idea we were going to save their soul, not to prove ourselves right, not to show how smart we are, not to be pharisaical in our attitudes. Jesus found the man a little bit later. I assume he was in a public place. I still can't imagine what he was doing, just wandering around looking at everything with this great surprise or amazement. But Jesus found him. And Jesus saw this man as what he needed. And he asked him, do you believe in the Son of Man? And the man answered, yes. Where is he? Who is he? And Jesus said, he's the one you saw, and he's the one speaking to you now. Maybe the man who recognized his voice when Jesus told him to go wash, I don't know. But whatever it was, this man had no doubts. And he said, Lord, I believe. You know, Jesus saw an opportunity where others didn't. That's the reason I call it seeing and not seeing. Jesus saw. The ones we talked about didn't see. All the others saw what they wanted to see, not what was really there. And I guess the question for us this morning is, what do we see when we see our neighbor, when we see someone who appears to be looking? Do we help them find what they really need? You know, I guess this year, 2020 is an awful year. And we feel a little bit hindered in our ability to do some of the things we want to do. And we could call it a crisis. But do we see what's possible? You know, in every difficulty, everything that's going on, there are opportunities. There was an opportunity with this blind man, and Jesus took it. And we have opportunities too. Sometimes, like now, we have to look a little bit harder to find them. But they're there. And we can continue to get ourselves wrapped up in the politics and argue about this, or we can begin to look for opportunities. I think that's the challenge we have today, and it's a difficult one. We're not even shaking hands in here, so how can we approach someone about the gospel? Don't know the specifics. We just got to look. Because I think when we come out of this, people are going to be looking for something more than what they have. And someone mentioned this to me back some time back. Everyone wants to be better than they are. And I had to think about that a little bit, but you know, that's true. Who does not want to be better than they are? Jesus offers that opportunity. We offer that opportunity this morning to you. If you have a desire to change your life and improve your life, we'd love to be able to help you do that. If you've not been baptized in the body of Christ, then there's no better time. We're here to help. We're here because we love one another.